Dear venerable sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, today also we are going to take time for the day's Dhamma talk. Everyone settle down and give the consent with 3 times, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු වරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ අයං උච්චති අජ්ජත්තිකා ආකාශ ධාතු යාච බාහිරා ආකාශ ධාතු පටවිධා ආකාශ ධාතු රේවිසා තං මේ තං මම නේසෝ හමස්මි නමේසෝ අත්තාතිව මේ තං යතා භූතං සම්මප්පඤ්ඤාය දක්ඨබ්බං තීති. Dear Dhamma friends, along this particular discourse delivered by the Buddha, namely Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, we were slowly proceeding, and yesterday we took time to understand what does it mean by the earth element, as far as the meditator's point of view is concerned. The Buddha enumerated the hard, solid parts in one's body, namely the head hair, the body hair, the skin, teeth, and the nails, like it's continue up to 20 parts and etc. Going on. And whenever someone is continuing with the meditation, you can see this in 2 ways. When and where the mind is well focused to your primary object, for example, if you take this in-breath and out-breath, they are while the attention, the noting mind, is face to face with the in breath and out breath, you can feel some hardness and softness, smoothness and roughness, heaviness and lightness, either within the sphere of in breath and out breath or within what you call your own body. It's very subtle. You feel hardness, you feel softness or soft nature or hard nature, and often they are related to your body parts. You will say, I feel hardness in my left shoulder and some kind of a softness in my head. Likewise, hardness often recognized with one of the body parts. The hardness that you see is the absolute name for the earth element, but in conventionally we say it is related to our body parts. So more and more you practice, when the practice advance, or when more and more you familiarize with, when more and more you season with it, you are instructed to see only the hardness and the hard nature rather than your conventional body part. So then and there, one day, you will understand this hardness happens and then sometimes replaced by softness. And the heaviness you can feel with respect to the lightness. And the roughness you can see softness. Likewise, this they are happening, and at the beginning you may see only one facet. If you see hardness, hardly you feel comparative softness in the background. Whenever you see heaviness, you fail to understand the heaviness happened in the lightness background. Otherwise, there is no absolute heaviness as such. They are always relative. So when and where you leave aside your body parts and try to see hardness or hard nature, that is to say sabhava lakkhana, you are being leading more forward to see, leaving aside your bodily parts, but the hardness, softness, thickness, tension, like, of course, now we are talking about the earth element. And there are more and more you practice, you will see hardness can't stand comparatively without softness. Hardness and softness always compare each other. They are mere relative, no absolute hardness as such. And there is no absolute softness as such. So, due to your likings and disliking, whenever hardness arises, if you get hooked up with it, if you react to it, if you assume this as my left shoulder is hard, I don't know whether it's going to be a frozen shoulder or something like that, you are going to proliferate storytelling and fabrication, your attention may not be more towards the inside and you get emotionally involved and you get committed to that, fail to understand this hardness happen with the background of softness and the heaviness happen with the background to lightness likewise. So therefore you have to slowly relinquish your desire and the attachment to your body part or body. More and more you detach from the body parts and the attachment to the body, then you are more and more released, more and more relaxed to see the comparative nature, hardness against the softness and the heaviness against the lightness. So when and where this is happening, your mind becomes relaxed, mind gets disenchanted, dispassionate to your body, but a huge amount of sap of the Dhamma, the juicy part of the vipassana going to come out. So it's a kind of a comparison. It's a kind of a compromise. If you are well educated and well prepared with lot of experience, lot of trial and error, gradually you can understand the attachment to the body and the passionate feeling to the body always prevent you from understanding these elements in vipassana point of view. And you will get emotionally get involved. This hardness indicates sickness, or this hardness indicates some kind of a comfort, whatever may be. So this is the how one yogi make use this understanding of elements in order to advance, and they are your own theoretical understanding, your own inferential knowledge, deductive knowledge, and rational knowledge has to backed with this under-the-nose experience. And sometimes when they are marrying each other, harnessed each other, you feel so hilarious, each and every stiffness, the hardness, softness, heaviness, lightness, roughness, smoothness happens. You can understand, earlier you used to understand with respect to your body and with respect to your liking and disliking and with respect to your emotional involvement and commitment. Now you can understand they as mere elements. It is never happen in each and every city. Occasionally, when and where the faith, the energy, mindfulness, concentration and wisdom align, you can see they are mere elementary characteristics. When and they are not aligned, when and they are the faith, the energy, the mindfulness, concentration and wisdom not aligned, you have your own interpretation according to your personal likings and disliking. So that prevent you from observing elementary characteristic in its intrinsic nature. So this is happening not only in sitting meditation, of course in walking meditation also you feel heaviness, lightness, softness, smoothness, all the kind of thing. But even in the day-to-day activities also, whenever you put your hand into something, you feel it is like touching. You touch what? You touch something hard. You touch something soft. Hard means your hand is soft, the material is hard. Soft means the material is hard, your hand is soft. So you can understand whenever the interaction going to happen, whenever the contact going to happen, our mind is partial. It see only what is our feeler, our tentacle, that is the fingertips, feel it. But as soon if you get involved with this liking and disliking and desirability and undesirability, your penetrating capacity you have to sacrifice. But instead that closed eyes, if you touch something and your brain says, now you touch something heavy, so theoretically you can back up with it, telling that this heaviness is because my hand is light. And if you feel and touch and contact something light, you have to understand that my hand is tough and tight. That is why it appears soft. So likewise, each and every touch becoming a Buddha, becoming Dhamma, becoming Sangha, becoming a teacher, whenever your faculties are alive. So of course, many understand this direct touch. In sitting meditation, there's a fair amount of proportion understanding. Walking meditation also, hardly someone will be so aligned, so mindful, so prepared to feel each and every touch in terms of these elements. When and where this is happening, you can make a determination from the morning to the evening to feel everything, not only with the fingertips. Anything happen, anything come contact with your body, this is teaching. This is teaching. Extremes are working in such a harmonious way, no disparity. But whenever we take one part, that definitely going to give likings and dislikings, desirability and undesirability. But how much you are going to impose your personal likings and dislikings and values to what you feel, these elements are ever teaching you in an untiring way. They never withdraw telling that you are a fool, you are an idiot, you are a partial. Never. So when Jnanarama used to say, they are teaching you in an incessant way, in a silent sermon, and always teaching. Whether you are a Buddhist or non-Buddhist, whether you have already developed mindfulness or not, but we don't know how to get this pure Dhamma out of each and every contact, because our mind is so much involved with emotional values, liking and dislikings, and our personality traits. So therefore you have to understand all these kind of our premeditated criteria are nothing but a block to understand these elementary characteristics. And when and where your mind is prepared, elements are ready. They are already prepared. They are already in the motivated form, mobilized form. So it's a matter of your preparedness. So you prepare with the touch of the breath on your right nostril or the left nostril or top of your lip, and where you feel the touch, the rubbing sensation. This is maybe the cursor, the starting point. And if you are going to limit your experience only to the sitting meditation and touching sensation or the rising and falling the abdomen, you are like a suckling baby. You never try to eat by your own thing, and you are never ready to earn something. You are always depending on the breast and only suckling half digested food. You will never grow. So at the beginning, of course, each and every baby must be fed with milk. But later, you must understand how to eat little solid foods. And uncomplicated foods, and later the complicated foods, and later heavy proteins, and you have to earn your meat. That is the way you, in the sitting meditation, you get this touch limited to in-breath and out-breath. So when you keep on practicing, the other touches appear like a secondary object or impediment or distraction or disturbance, or you start complaining, I wish only to see the in-breath and out-breath on the exactly the same point, but I feel touch of my leg on the hard surface, and what should I do? Am I progressing or is it impediment? But if you are looking, of course starting from the in-breath and out-breath, if you are looking at elementary characteristics, it is everywhere, each and every moment, as far as you are living, elements are giving a silent sermon. And only the thing is, you are not ready to listen. You are, if at all you are listening, you lose at least 50%. You are not ready to go beyond it. Whenever your body touches something, your deductive knowledge never go beyond the skin. This is, into my skin, it is hard. But theoretically you can understand, other side of the, or other companion of the contact is the soft, that is why I feel hard. So this is the way you give kind of a deductive knowledge, inferential knowledge, and rational knowledge to understand, and then you feel enrichment, you feel contentment, each and every touch is complete by itself. It is absolutely complete by itself. But we have been trained, the internal part of the contact, the external part of the contact, our knowledge is rather limited to the internal part, therefore it is ever confined and limited, never spreading out. So therefore, when you start with the earth element, later you have to add, or naturally it is coming to being, the heat and cold come into being. And the fluidity and cohesiveness come into being. And the jerks, vibration, shakings, and steadfastness come into being. When everything comes, you have to understand it comes through contact. The other party of the contact may be internal or external, whatever may be, by your understanding, deductively you can understand what is the other parties. So when it is going, you understand external things also have elementary characteristics, but they don't understand, they are not claiming, because they are not with the consciousness. Your internal part, also nothing but elements, but it is covered with the consciousness, that very consciousness try to limit into yourself, never try to understand the other party, the other partner of the contact, and you may complain telling they are unconscious thing, I only can feel what is related to me. But as far as the elements are concerned, whether it is working within the consciousness or outside, it immaterial for the elements. So that is a very crucial thing. Buddha says, to make use it, to emphasize, ayam vichachi ajhatrika patavidhatu, yacha baidha patavidhatu, patavidhatu revesa. So monks, you may say this is your internal or conscious so-called me, so-called mind, paravidhatu. But they can't read by itself unless otherwise they touch it, external paravidhatu. And external paravidhatu is not ajhatika, not pachatta, not upadina. We are not used to say it is me or mine or myself. And I am not responsible for that. I am responsible for what is called myself. And therefore, they are not achatika. They are not upadina. But in order to have a contact, both must come. But if you look at from the neutral view, point of view, both of them are mere paravidhatu. Whether you call, this is warm, this is me, this is mine. Whether you disclaim external part, both of them are patavidhatu, patavidhatu raivesa. Oh monks, they are mere patavidhatu. But so-called internal Patavi Dhatu, the limit, that is external and internal, where the boundary, where the limit is a mere concept. That is the point you decide how much you claim as me, so much so you suffer. How much you do not claim as me, never contribute for suffering. Even if it is contributing, you never find fault with it. So therefore, moment you see external patavidhasu, internal patavidhasu, there is no difference. The very first Catholic funeral I participated, and there, it was completely new for me because I know only the Buddhist way of funeral ceremonies. And the father came and gave a sermon, and then he took little soil and he put into the coffin, soil to soil, ash to ash. It was hilarating. It was a shock going through me. That particular person will say, how can the word do it? Soil to soil. If he is conscious, he will claim this is not soil. Mine is Patavi Dhatu, it is me, mine. But that particular person already dead. Father says, soil to soil, ash to ash, internal soil and external soil is the same. Internal ash, external ash the same because person is unconscious, person dead. The Buddha says, you also one day you also dead, for sure. You may not happy now, but one day. And they are, can you claim that internal Patavidasa is touching external Patavidasa? No, they are just Patavidasa. Till that only you have emotions. Till that only you have panic. Till that only you have hysteria. Till that only you have diseases. Till that only you see this and that kind of thing. But you have to understand, it started also the same. It end up also in the same. In between, you have discrimination. This is me, this is not me. So much so the tension. So much so the frustration. So much so the neurosis. So therefore Buddha says, reduce your Patavi Dhatu as few as possible. And let it contact with external Patavi Dhatu and understand this very touch without the self-notion and feel external Patavi Dhatu, internal Patavi Dhatu through the contact, your mind happy to say it is Pachattang Upadhinnam, that is me, that is what I have to take responsibility, that is not me, that is how the contact takes place. So therefore you never say Patavidasu contact Patavidasu, you say me contact, not me. And then the tension. But if you manage to see Patavidasu contact Patavidasu, there is no tension because this is happening everywhere in the world, it is not concerned about you. So this is the story Buddha wanted to share with each and every yogi, going to the Patavi Dhatu and experience under your very nose continuously, thousand and one times, and see Patavi Dhatu you can't expect, even if it is yours, without a contact. In order to have a contact, it must touch with external Patavi Dhatu or another internal Patavi Dhatu. Whenever the contact happens, if you are going to say, this is me, this is mine, this is myself, your knowledge is partial. You can't see the phenomena as such. So on the experimental level, on the insight level, you have to understand it is mere two Patavi Dhatu or earth elements touching. Unless otherwise you call, this is me and this is not me, this is mere physics. There's nothing to call biology. It is Patavi to Patavi. So this way you can go into all the four elemental characteristics. So therefore, it is not limited to your posture. It is not limited to your time of the day. Every time, each time, when we are awake, that means we are awakened to contact. Each and every contact, if you can analyze from the dhatu point of view, elementary point of view, it is a silence of means going on. And when it comes to the akasa dhatu, the Buddha says, we call internal akasha dhatu the space, we call external akasha dhatu the space, and internal one we call ajjhattam upadinna. That means this is, I call this me, inside. And upadinna means I have to take responsibility about that. I am the governor, I am the owner of it, I have executive powers, I have my soul, as far as the internal space is concerned. And then to give very obvious example, the Buddha says, kanna chittam, mukha chittam, that means space inside your ear, space inside your nose, space inside your mouth, and space inside your digestive tract, everything is akasa dhatu. And Buddha says it is not smeared with blood. It is covered with the soft skin, and still it is akasa dhatu, that is we call internal akasa dhatu, and the outside one we call external akasa dhatu, external space. And the Buddha says, both of them are just mere space. And when you observe the internal space and the external space, more than the Pataviyapoti Juvayo, you are more bound to say, this Akasha Dhatu is not me, not mine, not myself. Because it is something negative. It is not the existence of Dhatu, it is the space. It's the lack of dhatu, lack of rupa dhatu. So therefore, when and where you are to see the space between, you feel something lost. You feel something uncontented. You feel something uncertain. You feel something nauseatic. For example, if I am to cite still a micro kind of experience, when you observe in the in-breath, at the beginning it appears like a one shot or one phenomena at the beginning. But very closely observing, you find 1001 in-breaths within one in-breath. It is happening in a very gradual process. And 1001 out-breaths within one outbreak. So in between these two pieces, the space exists. Space and time both. So if you know the art of thin slicing of time and increasing the sharpness of the mindfulness, you can say each and every action is not a solid unit one. It's a series of actions. One after the other, they are completely separate. Due to our ignorance and due to lack of observation, due to lack of our surveillance, it happens like one unit, but ultimately they are small pieces put together, and between two tiny in-breaths, the space is there and the time is there. When and where you bound to see it, you feel like something lost, as if you are sitting on a chair. That chair is rotten now, so you may fall down. It is made out of very, very soft wood, and it's not hard enough, it can topple. Likewise, your so-called breath is also agglomeration rather than the solid, unit, concrete thing. So when and where happen, the akasa dhatu come into being, come into your direct experience, you feel kind of a fear, you feel kind of uncertainty and lost kind of feeling. So therefore, you try to re-establish it by gross breath gain. Do not, you usually won't allow the breath to happen under the magnifying glass kind of description. So you tend to entertain doubts. Is it something wrong with my mindfulness? Is my mindfulness is broken? Or is my concentration broken, or my object is broken. Often you tend to see the mindfulness is broken, concentration is broken, wisdom is broken, So therefore, better thing to open the eyes and start fast cross-breathing in order to reconfirm and to get spaceless, thick, unity kind of a breath. So that is, it's a very micro level. You can understand the in-breath and out-breath. But whatever may be, again when you are going to practice, whenever the mindfulness align with the other faculties, you see nothing in this world you can reduce to one unit. Everything is agglomeration. Everything is something put together. So whenever they disintegrate, you lose your identity. You lose your self-orientation. And you find that what you hold into is not the superior kind, it's a kind of inferiority, kind of uncertainty come into being. So therefore, when and where are these akasa dhatu going to manifest in the in-breath and out-breath, in the left leg and right leg, on the all the other kind of thing, you feel lost ground. So that is how you feel like opening eyes and you feel like no more I can sit and wait, so no more I can sit and meditate. So therefore your consciousness play tricks. Consciousness become very perverted in order to make it, at least for the time being, to look at, to see it as a concrete thing, to see it as a unity. It's a solid, unbroken, unfragmented. So that is how the consciousness is going to play. So if someone is well advised, well instructed and well prepared, and then one day you will still go further into the in-breath and out-breath, or rising and falling, or left and the right legs, you can see they are, earlier it appeared like a beehive. Now bees are separate. The hive is no more. The bees are bees, but they are spread. So likewise the magnifying happens. That magnifying is due to the space and time spreading. When it's going there, the hive, the unity, the solidity, the unfragmented thing appear to be spreading. So when that happens, it's a very clear indication that space in between try to manifest. But the thing is, are we ready? Am I ready to be face to face with that? So when it is happening, ultimately, if you are really, really observant, the space is more than 95%, the availability of the matter is becoming less than 5%. That is what happened to Einstein. Ultimately, when you go to the space and go into the subatomic particles, they found the so-called quantum, the energy agglomeration, is one quantum is so far away from the other quantum, the in-between so much of space. Earlier, we thought it's a solid unit. Maybe it's a piece of iron or it's a piece of copper. But when you analyze it and go into the subatomic particles, you find so much of space. And you can call it as a matter. It is going in between matter and the energy. So whenever the Patavyapotejo well understood, and when it gives rise to opening to the space, your argumentation, your solidity in your language, the solidity in your grammar, solidity in your communication, everything threatened. You yourself can't believe what is happening. And therefore you feel like wiping your eyes. You feel like opening your eyes. You feel like doing again the forced breathing. You feel like touch and see whether all the parts are intact. Otherwise you feel part and parcel of the body is not available. With your closed eyes, sitting, meditation, upper part is there, but the lower part you can't feel. Or sometimes lower part, heavily you can feel the touching point, but upper part you can't see. So much you are, it become unbelievable, you feel like opening your eyes and see. But anyway, opening your eyes will bring you back to the conventional truth rather than the absolute. But again, if you close eyes, very quickly that again and again it is going there. That is due to that lack of understanding, lack of proper preparation. But if you go prepared, easily you can let it happen in this own accord, and that is the facilitating, or the way you have to facilitate the meditation. So that is a non-reaction. That is the just being. Let the mindfulness to lead it. And when you are leading, the everything come under the magnifying glass. It is not a normal magnifying glass. It is like an electron microscope. Everything becomes see-through. So when it is happening, you see you are now hit with space rather than something material. Still, you see materials are floating here and there in a huge space. And if you are not reacting, if you are not getting frightened, if you are not getting excited with, let it happen. At the time you feel like no any matter, you end up with the just space. And there, the Buddha says, that is the point you are ready to understand the pure form of consciousness. As far as you are dealing with the materiality, Patavi Apo Teju Vayo, consciousness is hiding behind. As far as you can't discriminate the space and the matter, consciousness can play hell. Consciousness can take the advantage of your bewilderment, advantage of your ignorance, advantage of your misunderstanding. But you settle down, you let them to settle down, just like leaving the muddy water to precipitate. Ultimately, at a time you feel complete space, no any sign. At a time you feel thoughts are floating, heaviness and the pains are floating, or sounds come and go. But if you learn non-reactional kind of meditation, or we can say insight, or we can say observation, then you can understand when and where your mind is ready to be with its mere space, without questioning. Even that space is smeared with little bit of pain and sounds and thoughts. If you are non-reacting, if you are unassuming, if you are ready to let go, then you can see, as far as you don't see the discrimination, vijnana loses its grip. And the magic becomes obvious. As far as you have understood, this is matter, this is space, vijnana takes the upper hand. The function of the vijnana is dividing and ruling. This is matter, this is non-matter. You have to train your mind in such a way, and to train in a thousand and one way, you have to season the way, whether the thought, little bit thought, pain, sound comes, don't get agitated. Don't let them to take you for a ride. Just let them come and go, and you just observe as if you have no eyes. You are a person with now wisdom eye. You see, but you behave like a blind. They are coming and floating, they play their own dance, but you are not interested in. And they have their own music, no. And they have their own pain and come and inflict you. But you behave like a dumb person or a paralyzed person, then only you can understand, as far as you are not discriminating, vijnana become naked. Vijnana can't play no more. And it become, you feel whether this experience is mine or whether this experience is pure dhamma, pure cause and effect relationship, and you merge into the Akash library, that is to say universal knowledge, universal consciousness, or kind of a limitless consciousness. And when that happens, or I would say to that happen, everything must be perfectly aligned. If anything goes imbalance, you never come up to that kind of a coincidence. You never come up to that kind of level. So therefore you have to understand how many times You have to do this trial and error and let you learn how to develop non-reaction, how to develop unassuming way of meditation and let the drama to play. You are fully vigilant. You are very diligent. You are here and now. But sceneries are there, you behave like a blind person. Sounds and music and all the kinds of they are, you behave like a deaf. And other feeling, the things also they are, you try your best to not to react, not to assume, not to get involved with or get hooked up with. So whenever that happens, ultimately you corner the vijnana, that becomes naked. So when that happens only, the Buddha says, the vijnana becomes pariyodata, parisuddha. Now it has no material, no things to do juggleries. Vijnana being cornered, and that is the way the Buddha says, to understand vijnana is pure form, and they are, the Buddha is giving kind of a hint or catalyzing you. When and where vijnana is there, what does it do is understanding the pleasure from the pain. Or discriminating. This is a liking and this is disliking. The matter as far as there, I feel confident. But when and where the space happens, I feel lost. I feel bored. I feel monotonous. So therefore one has to understand as far as you are discreet and discriminate and understand this is matter, it is happy, good and it is sound and founded. This is immaterial thing, space that I feel lost and kind of thing. So much so, the vijnana is making you this ignorance and ruling the game. Moment you understand when the matter is there, the thoughts are there, pains are there, never mind. You behave as if there is nothing, and then only the vijnana become caught up into the situation and become in the pure form. And when that happens, the Buddha says, one can, if it is necessary, one can make a determination, or one can go into, may my mind remain with the space. Akasa anantang, that means more than the matter, the space is limitless. Space is frictionless. Space is without any knots. So therefore friction, knots, limits are the cause of suffering. So whenever you see there is no limit, no space, no knots, you have to, you will prove yourself within this human life, you can experience it. Maybe for a split second or few thought moments. But for that, you must have to have a guts. You must have to have the boldness, or you must have to have the radical kind of a reflection, because our whole knowledge, the world knowledge is based upon the matter. Our senses can't understand space. The sensuous kind of or knowledge based upon the senses are completely based upon the matter. So for that only we have the desire, the hatred, envious, jealous, big part, lion share, vatnapanchit, everything. Whenever you focus into the space, it's a walk-off. You are the winner without a rivalry. You're definitely in the enormous space. No one can come and fight you. No one come and claim you this and that. But your rational thinking never allow you to accept the space as a peace or solitude or relaxation. So therefore you can put into that the space and see. So then you have to understand why, even if it is so cheap, even it is so abundant, even it is without any fight, it is available. Why your mind is not going? Because consciousness is always finding yet another thing to compare it with and give value to the muck, the dirty thing, the matter. Then the fighting happens. So therefore, more and more you to entertain the space, more and you to season the space, more and more you to familiarize the space, you will come to know who is the culprit preventing me from entertaining this solitude, entertaining this space. The vijnana always wanted to have two duality, two things to fight each other, discriminate each other, and give the attention to the cheaper thing, the inferior thing. And the superior thing become cornered. So that is why the Buddha says, understand the very cheaper thing, that is a materiality, for your utmost clarity, for your utmost detail. Under your very nose, immediately, don't listen to someone, directly understand it, and when and where you go to the matter, no way it is leading to the space. More and more you understand the matter, it is ultimately leading to the space. That secret only the Buddha knows. We thought that when we are learning more and more on this matter, we will be get hooked up and desired and all the kind of the matter. But please remember, Isaac Newton taught us the matter. But the science itself, by keep on experimenting with the matter, ultimately end up in the space. Even in the worldly knowledge. But I don't know whether I have not met Einstein, but he has told, it is better if I had not met up with that space, it is a bloody question to the science now. You can't understand, they can't comprehend it, what happened. Because they were earlier thought the matter is the part that scientist has to understand. The space and other thing is for the church. Because it is mystic. Which you can't comprehend. Your senses are not working at that space. But what happened was he slipped and hit on the space and he's been given the highest prize and the honorary thing, but he felt sorry. And you also will feel sorry. Whenever you go to the space, you will ask after 14 days of meditation, is this the bloody thing I have to bring back home? The space. And if you are going to show your dear and near one, how nice and what solitude and what the freedom, this is the what I have, this is space, you will be assigned to asylum. Tell him, that is what I told you before going, don't do this bad thing that you are now mad. So exactly, had the Isaac Newton to be here, he will find fault with the Einstein. He went and hit something, and he has used a lot of complicated formulas. But anyway, he came out with the E is equal to mc square. And people understand the matter is nothing but energy. Energy is nothing but matter. They change with no one's agenda. And later Schrodinger only told, the changing happened due to the consciousness. Whenever the consciousness come into interact with the energy, it collapses into matter. If the energy consciousness is not interacting with the energy, it just behaves like a wave energy. So that is what the Buddha says, unless otherwise it comes into contact with, nothing causes any suffering. Anything contact, you call it is pleasurable, painful and no pain, no pleasure. Buddha says all the three, nothing but suffering. So in the meditation, you reduce your contact only to the breath and let the breath to ceases to exist. Then you go to a place, no contact. And that is the place you become bored. That's the place you become nauseatic. That's the place you develop fear. That's the place you develop uncertainty. And you feel like get up and go. So that means meditation is double effective. It's really working, but your mind is not ready to accept it. there are some roots, causes, something like karmic forces, something like your lack of comprehension, something like lack of trial and error experimenting, something like you are not ready to be a radical in reflection. So therefore each and everyone is blocking you. But this elementary characteristic are so democratic, showing everyone exactly the way. Because their behavior is according to the universal law. You can't change it. But the thing is, you must have the correct perspective. You must have your method of meditation. And together with the meditation, you must have the theoretical understanding, deductive knowledge, and the radical reflection to see things in their own way, that is to say, non-reactional way. And then you can see more and more you familiarize the space, you are bound to see the function of the vijnana. Vijnana prevent you from all the point of views, not to be with the space, but to go back and be mingled with matter. And that is the point you understand. The understanding between, or discrimination between, or difference between the matter and the energy, nothing but the manifestation of vijnana. So therefore it is very tricky. It makes the matter and not non-matter. How the non-matter become matter and matter become non-matter. And therefore you find the understanding of the matter and non-matter is so precise, so subtle. It is so out of your discipline. And therefore understanding the non-matter space is the secret of understanding the matter. And understanding of non-matter, the space is therefore appear very subtle, sometimes mystic, sometimes radical, and then only you will understand the consciousness is still preliminary, primordial than understand the space. Therefore, consciousness is the creator. If at all you have to find an omnipotent, omnipresent creator, that is the bloody consciousness, but it creates all the time suffering. So therefore, you, as Buddha says, if you are to say it's a creator, this is the bloody one, but he's not the creator, he's a destructor, creating all suffering. Till you corner it, till you hold it as consciousness, and you can't keep it because it is making so much of uncomfortability, so much of fearfulness, so much of uncertainty. Even if you come to that face to face with the vijnana, you will never see. You feel you lost your identity. You feel you lost your conceit. You lose your desire. So therefore no more motivation to do anything. And you will be just like another drop of water in the sea. Another grain of sand in the sand bed. And when that happens, for a person who is really searching about liberation, he or she can understand in this life, with so much of multitasking, with so much of responsibilities, still it is possible. But those who are with so much of misunderstanding, lack of enough knowledge, and if they are not the true people, they will understand as lost. They will understand as scattered off, and no motivation, no creativity, no productive, and then becoming just a citizen zone. So no one wish to be just a citizen zone. They want to be someone. They wanted to be one upmanship than other person. And he or she wanted to have the lion's share, the bigger part. And that is how it happens. So ultimately when you, from that perspective, if you look at the world, if you look at your past, you can understand the Buddha. You can understand the Dhamma. Through the Dhamma, you can understand what the kind of radical reflection he has done without any teacher, without any support. When we are organizing IYR, we have to promise you so much of things. Without you will not come. And before going, of course, you will see whether to do it. These are already assigned and assured, and otherwise you won't come. But during the time of the Buddha, he had the palace, he had everything, he renunciated, he went to. And that is, these are very preliminary and very revolutionary, and this is the real change. And such a mentality only can break through this kind of thing. And that is the point you will understand. For everything, the consciousness is the cursor. Consciousness is the one divide and rule, therefore it makes duality. One knows the other duality. So duality means suffering. So therefore later in the teaching, or we can say in the dispensation, there is one sect known as Yogacara. They call Vinyati Matrata Siddhi. They say consciousness is the creator of everything. So therefore whatever you see is that you are. Wherever you go, there you are, because what you see is not what is existing, but you wish to see. Wherever you go, it is not a coincidence. You have intention to go to that place. So therefore, wherever you go indicate who you are. Earlier we thought, known as the God creator, he is there, he is the one decide what I have to see, what I have to go. But ultimately when you reduce to the vijnana, it says it is vijnati, the projections of the vijnana is the world. So if you are with the full of loving kindness, you see the world is very beautiful, very aesthetic, very green. But if you are with the full of hatred, you find everything as a weapon, every person as an enemy, so you are in agony and you complain with the world. But that is what the Buddha says, Mano Pubbhangama Dhamma, Mano Setta Mano Meya, Manasache Pasannena Bahasativa Karotiva, Tato Nansuka Mangveti Chaya Vanapai. If your mind is blooming and well established and serene, whatever you do, it will be for your benefit. But if the mind is defiled, you may be genius and creating so much of new things. You may be very productive, but everything is bad for you and humanity. So therefore the Buddha says, first thing first, understand the mind. Understand and train the mind. And what the thing is, we don't have enough time. We have so much of responsibilities. We have so much of multitasking, so amidst of all the kind of, how the hell you can see the matter, the space and the consciousness, they are very, very serious thing and very deep thing. So maybe in the next Buddha's dispensation, the metta. And you accumulate so much of merits, accumulate, so one day you will, by a scholarship, you will go and land in the Nibbana. Not now. Anything helping that is nothing but pamada, negligence. Now in Sri Lankan Buddhism, the way people are finding excuse to postpone, and the how much the society at large appreciating it, I really appreciate Buddha never come to Sri Lanka. If he happened to come now, and so-called Buddhist organizations, so-called authority, the way they are making this fallacy, the Buddha will be very, feel very sorry. But the thing is, when you are practicing, that is naturally happening, but you have to understand, you are feel sorry about your past. This was my past. I also in the same boat. And I also thinking about the helping others and accumulating merits and becoming religious. And good. Because it is happening in a gradual way. Once you come up to the peak level only, you will understand. At that time you had an idea about the Nibbana, but this is very crispy. It is very something you can put into your pocket. You can put into a casket and pay respect to the Nibbana life. But when you are nearing that, you will understand it's a just mere dream. It is a childish kind of a wish. But the Nibbana is under your very nose. that you do not wish to see because you have the fear of freedom. You have the fear of new. You have the fear of radical something. So therefore you try Nibbana within the conventional framework. So Buddha says, it is an utter waste of time. The Buddha says that you use different criterion to see the truth, see the essence, see the good things. The Buddha says the faith is one criterion. You believe the essence, the truth is within the sphere of your faith. But the Buddha says the faith has two defects. One thing is what you selected that faith may be absence of the truth. What you rejected as not the faith may be consist of the truth. The second thing is hearsay. You listen from the teachers and the profound teaching and kind of thing, but you study it and rationalize, you will think the truth is within that. The others are heresy. But the Buddha says, just like the faith, what you studied and given thought and what you listen may be completely absence of the truth. What you rejected as not the truth or heretic may be carried the truth. The other thing is your desire, your liking and disliking. You never open yourself to dislike. You always find the truth and the happiness and the solitude and everything within your or within the range of liking. But the Buddha says it's also at the two holes. One thing is within the range of your liking, truth may not be like. It may be not available. But you have rejected that dislike, it may be. And the other one is, Buddha says, the rationalization, argument. Whatever you prove, going to prove with your argument, you think it is the part the truth is having, like. But the Buddha says, argument also one thing you use as a criterion to search truth. For his understanding, omniscient knowledge, he says, but you proved that the argument may be not having any truth. But you rejected as false, may be having the truth. The other one is your view. You have, each and every one is having their own view. And they think the other person is wrong because he is within not my view. I might be the one having the truth. But the Buddha says, this is the fifth one. Even though you selected this as your digested and boiled down view, that may not be having the truth. What you rejected as the wrong view may carry the truth. But when and where you do under the nose experiencing and don't let the truth, faith to decide everything, whatever the faith, you test it with your hearsay or what you listen. And whatever you listen, test it. Try it to see whether can I put that into your mind likings and not to decide this is truth and this is balance is untruth, and then rationalizing and the view, the rotate in a such a way, don't leave one criterion to decide anything. Put again and again, and at the end of this Dhatu Vibhanga, specifically on the Dhatu, the Buddha says it is like when you are cleaning your ornaments made out of gold or silver. There are a lot of tiny little decorations. So they are the what the goldsmith is doing. It put under the heavy heat and burn little layer and put into the water and brush it. And again put into the heat and again put into water. Again heat, again put. All the dirt will burn, but the gold never shaken by the heat or the cold. So therefore, little by little, you keep on refining. After complete refining, complete removal of your grease and the dust and dirt, then only you put into the aquaricia, the golden the liquid, and you put the gold plating. Before gold plating, it has to clean to the absolute. So, meditative life is, you understand little by little, put into water, put into fire, put into water, put into fire. That means at a time you are with the matter, at a time you are with the space. At a time you are with the pleasure, at a time you are with the suffering. So, when both the thing happens, kind of a refinement happens. So this is kind of a trial and error. Whenever immaterial space happens, you feel my meditation lost, my concentration lost, I am not mindful, I can't account for, and I am lost. Whenever the matter happens, breath is very clear, you are coming with smiling for the interviews and say, today I can go for this much of kind of thing. But the Buddha says, one day you have to understand both in the same weight, same consideration. Sons are very happy, play happily and light and light perception and everything. Next time everything massacring, torturing, burning. The day you have to see both of them are nothing but two sides of the same coin. That much you have to keep on practicing while practicing, just like a the goldsmith cleaning and peeling a gold ornament. Slowly the cleaning happens. So therefore, it boils down, don't be judgmental about your meditation, but be regular to the practice. If you are regular to practice, this is my sitting time, you sit. This is my walking time, you walk. This is my day-to-day activities with the mindfulness, you do. So mindfulness will take responsibility, but you can't read the message. So therefore, you are fighting to interpret, give commentaries is an utter waste of time. When you go up there only you can understand, you always try to maximize the desire, the conceit and egoistic idea. With that idea, meditation is utter failure. Whenever the meditation is good and you have to appreciate, you find it is dwindling off your desire. You are no more try to be one-upmanship. No more you are trying to see the world from your own point of view. You try to be a wider in the perspective. So, for a rational mind, the conventional mind, that kind of perspective is utterly absence. So, you have to believe the Buddha, believe the Dhamma, believe the Sangha, keep on practicing. So, at the beginning it appears like faith. Later you do it for the sake of doing, just due to the momentum. Just due to the acceleration, you can't stop it. And that is the way the Buddha, even after the enlightenment, he meditated. Even after all the arahants, after becoming arahant, full achieved, they still meditate. It is like an addiction. Once you started with marijuana or something like that, you keep on. This is also kind of an addiction, but the Buddha has given it. It makes no damage to others, to you, no me, no any damage to the present and the future. So therefore you can prescribe any dear and dear one. But before prescribing, try to understand under your very nose. Don't have preconceived ideas, see things as they are, report things as they are. If that is the case, this whole big complicated formula is not much important. Most important thing is direct touch. And direct touch has no gradual development. It's a quick, it is timeless kind of thing. But we have trained our mind due to this linear pattern. Therefore, we have to learn in the gradual process. But whenever you understand, you find it is impromptu, it is electric. So I hope today Dhamma talk also will helpful for all to understand this kind of a rational, kind of a radical way, and hope by practicing in this radical way, each and everyone will get more rejuvenated with that idea, with that blessing. I will sum up the today's talk. Thank you very much for listening.